Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Today we'll be studying from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, and we'll be doing the text number 2 from chapter 29. Chapter 29 actually only commenced yesterday. We have covered just the first verse, so today we'll focus on the second one. So text 2 of chapter 29 in Canto 4 goes as follows.
नारदोवाच
पुरुषं पुरंजनं विद्या यद्व्यानक्त्यात्मनःपुरम् आत्मनपुरम् एकद्वित्रि चतुष्पादम् एकद्वित्रि चतुष्पादम् बहुपादम् अपादकम् The great sage Narad Muni continued, you must understand that Puranjan, the living entity, transmigrates according to his own work into different types of bodies, which may be one-legged, two-legged, three-legged, four-legged, many-legged, or simply legless. Transmigrating into these various types of bodies, the living entity, as the so-called enjoyer, is known as Puranjan. Transmigrating into these various types of bodies, the living entity, as the so-called enjoyer, is known as Puranjan. Purport. How the spirit soul transmigrates from one type of body to another is nicely described here. The word eka pada, one-legged, refers to ghosts, for it is said that ghosts walk on one leg. The word dvipada, meaning bite, refers to human beings. I don't know whether it's pronounced as bite or biped. bipedal. Okay. So the word dvipada, meaning biped, refers to human beings. When he is old and invalid, the human being is supposed to be triped or three-legged because he walks with the help of a stick or some kind of cane. Of course, the word chatushpada refers to quadrupeds or animals. The word bahupada refers to those creatures who have more than four legs. There are many insects such as the centipede and also many aquatic animals that have many legs. The word apada, meaning without legs, refers to serpents. The name Puranjan, indicates one who enjoys possessing different types of bodies. The name Puranjan indicates one who enjoys possessing different types of bodies. His mentality for enjoyment in the material world, Puranjan's mentality for enjoyment in the material world, is accommodated by different types of bodies. His mentality for enjoyment in the material world is accommodated by different types of bodies. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadamayam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Giri Yatripatam Maham Vande Sri Guru Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyayam cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya The great sage Narada Muni continued, you must understand that Puranjan, the living entity, transmigrates according to his own work into different types of bodies, which may be one-legged, two-legged, three-legged, four-legged, many-legged, or simply legless. Transmigrating into these different types of bodies, the living entity, as the so-called enjoyer, is known as Puranjana. So, in the previous chapter, which was chapter 28, Narada Muni has completed explaining to Puranjan a deep philosophy, the deep philosophy of Krishna consciousness, Atma Tattva, through the medium of allegory. Why he did that? Because he believed that Puranjan was not yet ready. Sorry, not Puranjan. The Trachinavarni was not yet ready to accept the message directly in a direct conversation. So he explained the situation of Trachinavarni as if he was talking about someone else, some king by the name Puranjan. That is called as the medium of allegory. So he has completed explaining that allegory in the previous chapter. Now, in preaching, this is a very good technique which Narad Muni is teaching all of us, is demonstrating to all of us, that if you cannot sometimes directly, you have to gauge the audience and see whether the audience will be able to digest a direct communication, or should you come in a roundabout way. Even in office we do that. Sometimes when we do presentations, we can't directly tell something, especially if it's a client who is sitting or a customer. We cannot tell the customer directly, you don't know what you want. Right, so we have to come around about saying that, you know, you are our esteemed customer, we understand your needs, and you have to come around about and then say that, you know, I'll give you a few options for you all to, you know, decide which one you want to choose, and then they'll choose something and by which you know what is their pain. You can't directly tell them. So indirect communication is many times deployed in material life, and it is also, you know, deployed in spiritual life. Now, while indirect communication has its advantages, indirect communication also has limitations. Because sometimes it's better that you tell something very upfront rather than going round and round and round. Because sometimes when you go round and round and round, after some time the other person tells, I've heard everything, but actually, you know, I have not really understood what you are trying to tell me. Can you please explain to me a little bit in detail? So again, you have to then go and explain to that person in detail. So, while direct communication has some advantages, that it is relatively non-confrontational in its nature, a direct way of communicating. But since the message is indirect, in an indirect communication, so elaboration may be required for a person, for that person to understand the message in his or her own context. So because when we communicate something, the person tries to assimilate that, process that in the mind, and then thinks, okay, I heard this, but how do I now relate it to my situation, and then what do I do? So Prachin Parhi, having heard this entire narration allegorically from Narad Muni at the end of this whole class, he is now seeking a deeper explanation. If you go to the earlier verse, yesterday verse, which Prabhudas Prabhu really nicely explained. So the earlier verse was, King Prachinavarni replied after hearing this whole narration, my dear Lord, he is addressing Narad Muni, we could not appreciate completely the purport of your allegorical story of King Puranjan. We could not appreciate it completely. Actually, those who are perfect in spiritual knowledge can understand. All this allegory, etc., he's saying, actually, those who are perfect in spiritual knowledge, they can understand. But for us who are overly attached to fruitive activities, to realize the purpose of your story is very difficult. I'll repeat this, but for us who are overly attached to fruitive activities, to realize the purpose of your story is very difficult. This is not very difficult to understand. That, you know, if we remember our own initial days in Krishna consciousness, I remember when I heard this verse, Trinada Pisuni Chena, Tarori Varsavishwana, Amanina Mardindaya, Kirtaniya Sadari. So, be humble than a blade of grass, and be tolerant than a tree. So, in the initial days when we are coming in Krishna consciousness, especially if we go with our spouses, relatives, etc., to those classes, then whenever, you know, some Maharaj or some speaker tells this lecture, we always look at the other person. Say, look what Maharaj said. Be humble. I have always told you that. We don't have the buddhi or the maturity or intelligence to understand that this message is for us. We think all negative instructions for others to learn from, and therefore they should decide how they should behave in us after that. Okay. So this is called as less intelligence. So sometimes when something is being communicated in general, if we are intelligent, we'll understand this message is for us. Actually, Prabhupada said, whatever purports that I have written, it is directly I'm telling you, Prabhupada said. So when we study something in Srimad Bhagavatam, as much as we think it is for us, we will benefit more than we think it is for other people, or only for giving classes. So, Prachin Bharhi, now, he has heard this. Prachin Bharhi is not yet spiritually very mature. So, Prabhupada is writing in the purport that persons devoid of devotion cannot perfectly understand this Atma Tattva. Because why? Because they are steeped in sense gratification. They are steeped in upadis. They have false identities about themselves. They have self-certified themselves in many cases. As you know, I am okay, the world is not okay. Therefore, these messages are very good for the world. Recently, when my mother left her body, I was in India and I was doing daily Bhagavatam twice, morning Bhagavatam, evening Bhagavad Gita. And many people from building used to attend. So, you know, sometimes what happens when people come, then they attend. So, one person said, this Bhagavad Gita is very nice. You know, whatever you are speaking is so nice. I have been telling all my family, I have been telling all my friends, you all should accept this message. You should study this. Then I said, have you studied? No, I have not studied, but I think it's very good. No? You tell them, very good, no, for everyone. So, this is how the initial day of Krishna consciousness. I remember I was also pretty much like that only. Okay, so always looking at others as if it's relevant for them. Of course, you know, now that situation is there, everyone now is thinking, how can I apply it? Today's situation is such that it's compelling now to think, how can I get Krishna consciousness faster? Because death can come any time. It's like that. So, So Prabhupada says that a person devoid of devotion cannot perfectly understand this Atma Tattva because they are steeped in false identities about themselves, and they have more of an inclination for enjoying this material world. So these messages cannot penetrate such people. So, for example, I went and met one of my relatives. I went to their house. In another city, and then I was, and they were saying that you are doing this Bhagavad Gita, etc. And we started talking something about spirituality. And the person said that, even I am fasting on Tuesdays. I said, why you are fasting on Tuesdays? So he said that, prosperity, wealth. Monetary prosperity. So very good, very good. I mean, the person obviously was, I couldn't go any further because I know the temperament of that person is such that, he'll probably hit me if I tell him anything further. So then I stopped short. Obviously, I had already spoken this to that person some years back, but it did not penetrate. Because when you are obsessed with trying to enjoy the material world, messages will just go through, just like that. It just won't go inside. So the receptors have to be ready to receive messages of Krishna. And we'll talk more about that down the line. Now, this is people who want to enjoy the material world. Now, even for a muktivadi, even for a person who seeks liberation, it is mentioned. So, Prabhupada says, Prabhupada meaning in yesterday's purport that unless you have some amount of bhakti, you cannot understand. You cannot succeed in any form of yoga. That is the underlying message Prabhupada is trying to say. So, even if you are chasing sense gratification, even if you are chasing bhakti, without the mercy or the sanction of the Lord, you will not be able to have sense gratification. For example, people may have accumulated millions of dollars in their bank account, but if they get heart attack and paralysis from diabetes or anything else, then all they are reduced to is being a vegetable in a wheelchair, regardless of what is their bank account. So unless the Lord's sanction is there, unless our karmic bank balance allows us to enjoy, we cannot enjoy despite our best plans to enjoy the material world. So in any aspect, if you see, the sanction of the Lord is required. And this is where I was talking about even a Muktivadi who is practicing jnana, or even the Ashtanga yogi, for him, for the success of his or her endeavors, then bhakti has to be a underlying component in any endeavor of yoga. Because the successful culmination of any yogic process is dependent or incumbent on the Lord's sanction. And it cannot come without bhakti in some form or shape. However, having said this, that other yogic processes are dependent on bhakti, bhakti in itself is independent of any other process. Bhakti stands alone in its own merit. So, that's why in fact when Sri Rupa Goswami opens the nectar of devotion with the definition of pure bhakti, where he says, Anya Avilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavrutam, where he says that bhakti actually is devoid of philosophical speculation and mundane karma. It is devoid of that. Rather, when we study nectar of devotion, the underlying principle in bhakti is service. It's sadhana and seva. Now it is interesting that the same Narad Muni who in Canto 1 had given this principle in one of his very famous verses, which was that Shushushu Sattadhanasya Vasudeva Katharuchi Syan Mahatseva Nipra Purnirti Tanishyava. So, when Narad Muni talks about himself and how he developed affinity for the messages of Godhead by which any message penetrates his brain, how does he say he developed that? By Shushrusha, by service to the saintly personalities. So, that is the secret of being able to assimilate the message of Godhead, which Prachinamuni is yet not able to assimilate when Narad Muni has told him in an indirect manner. So, it is by service only that one can obtain affinity and understanding of the message of Godhead. But up until now, Prachin Varhi's senses have not been completely purified. He is getting purified by the association of Narad Muni. So it is actually, you know, something is happening in the present. But he is unable to comprehend the entire import of Narad Muni's message. But one good thing is there in Prachin Varhi, despite his not being spiritually, you know, realized fully, he is demonstrating humility here. So he is humbly admitting his spiritual imperfection to Narad Muni. And in his humility, he is seeking elaboration of the underlying philosophy behind Narad Muni's allegorical rendition, if you like. And in response to that humble inquiry from Prachin Varhi, saying that I did not understand, Narad Muni today begins to elaborate on Atma Tattva. So that is our today's verse. This Atma Tattva is the underlying spiritual truth of our very existence. So he is beginning that narration today. Now, as much as Narad Muni begins this narration today, okay, with two-legged, three-legged, etc., Srila Prabhupada already gives us a heads up or an advance intimation or information on where Narad Muni is heading in giving this message to Prachin Varhi. So, how do we get that hint? That key message is in his last two lines. The name Puranjan indicates one who enjoys possessing different types of bodies. So in that sense, whoever has any desire within their heart, be they non-devotee or be they practicing devotees, because even practicing devotees have desire for enjoying this material world. So to the extent that we have that, then we are also Puranjan. And our mentality for enjoyment in the material world is accommodated by we getting different types of bodies. So if we substitute he with me, or my mentality for enjoyment in the material world is accommodated by my getting different types of bodies, then we will realize that we all have a bit of Puranjan in ourselves. That is why when we read the offenses to the holy name. One of the offenses is that maintaining material attachments even after hearing so many instructions in this matter. So why? Because all of us are going there. Like at least I am one. So we need to be constantly reminded to give up our attachment to this material world. Now, the key message behind this chapter is also talked about in explicitly in yesterday's purport by Srila Prabhupada at the end. Prabhupada says this 29th chapter, which is this chapter, describes that by too much attachment for women, one becomes a woman in the next life. But a person who associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his representative becomes free from all material attachments and thus is liberated. So Prabhupada gives that towards the end of yesterday's purport. So, what is the key message in this chapter? That too much attachment to a woman or too much attachment to enjoying material life is the reason for bondage in this material world. Whereas attachment to Lord or His devotees is liberating in its very nature. Now, there are two powerful verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, similar verses which were spoken by Kapila Muni in the third canto. The first one is from 3rd canto, 31st chapter, text number 35, where Kapila Muni says, Na tathasya bhave moho, bandhascha anya prasangataha, yoshit sangha yata pumsaha, yata tat sangi sangataha. Where he says, Kapila Muni says that it is very dangerous, most dangerous in this material world is the for a man, for a practicing devotee or for anybody is the always the thought and association of a woman. But more dangerous than that is association of a person who is attached to you. Because such a person can damage our Krishna consciousness also. He has the capability to drag us outside our Krishna consciousness and, you know, and tempt us. He is like the broker, he is like the advertiser, you know, who tells, oh, there is a material world, why are you wasting your time doing all these things? Come and enjoy. So that person is more salesman of bhakti is more dangerous than the object of bhakti. So that is why Prabhupada also cautions here in the previous purport. The second one also is there is another verse very similar where the attachment material life, sense gratification is binding, whereas attachment to saintly personalities is liberating. That also is being told by the same Kapila Muni a little bit earlier in Canto 3, chapter 25, text 20, where he says, Prasangam ajaram pasam, atmanam kavyo vidu, sa eva sadhu shukrito, moksha dwaram apavratam. So, the mind which is attached to sense gratification binds you to this material world, and if that mind is doubted to develop attachment and affection for the devotees, then that mind really liberates you. What is that verse? Mana eva manushyana karana bandha mokshaya Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada is, you know, reiterating that for us. So in that sense, he is giving a heads up on what is going to come as the key message, you know, of Narad Muni, which is simply beginning by talking about two-legged, three-legged thing, but he is going to come to that point eventually. So there, Prabhupada is preempting that also in his purpose. Now, as much as Kapila Muni also in the third canto is giving the principle of Krishna consciousness to these two powerful statements of attachment to a woman or attachment to a person who is attached to a woman and attachment dovetailed to, you know, saintly person, as much as he is doing all this in the chapter called as the glories of devotional service, Narad Muni is also essentially going to explain Bhakti Shastras to Prachin Bharhi eventually. But even Prachin Bharhi's spiritual maturity at this point in time, or immaturity if you like, he does so, he starts giving the message of pure bhakti by decoding the characters which he has explained in his elegy. There are so many characters which he has camouflaged in one sense, and then given the medicine to Puranjani. So So two, sorry, to Prachin Varni. But now he's going to decode that one by one. So in today's words, he starts with the decoding. And who is the first personality who is decoded? Puranjan. Who is Puranjan? The living entity who has a desire to enjoy this material world. So he is now decoding that. And that is what is today's translation. The great sage Narad Muni said, you must understand that Puranjan, the living entity, transmigrates according to his own work into different types of bodies with different many legs or no legs. And transmigrating into these different types of bodies, the living entity as the so-called enjoyer is known as Puranjan. So he started decoding that. Now, this approach of Narad Muni of playing the initial balls, if you like, of preaching, is very similar to an approach that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took when he started explaining Atma Tattva to Rupa Goswami in the famous conversation which happened in Dash Ashwamedha Ghat. So if you go to Chaitanya Charitamrita, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, in the banks of the Ganges, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started his narration to Rupa Goswami, Mahaprabhu also took a very similar approach to what Narad Muni is taking to Prachin Bhari. So here Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami in the Ashwamedha Ghat for 10 days, covering the entire spectrum of Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana. And in fact, that conversation, Shri Rupa Goswami says that that conversation forms the foundation of his great work, which is called as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. Shri Rupa Goswami actually alludes or refers to that conversation, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught him on the banks of the Ganges, at the structure of the Ghat. So, that approach of explaining Atma Tattva was very similar to how Narad Muni is doing here with Prachin Bhari. So, how did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explain this? So, first thing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu opened explaining Atma Tattva by saying that within this Brahmand or this big, shall cosmic universe, there are innumerable jivas, innumerable living entities who live according to their own karma. All of them are accumulating their own karma, and because of their own karma, they are transmigrating from one species to another species, or they are transmigrating from one planetary system to another planetary system. Species, they are either changing species or planets all the time. So, this is because of karma. And Prabhupada says in that purport that encagement, this encagement, not engagement, encagement, or being trapped in material existence. So, such people who are doing this transmigration across planets or across bodies, they are trapped since time immemorial. And then it concludes, that section, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu concludes by saying, but actually, why it is happening? Because all of them have forgotten that they are the Sambandha Tattva, which is what? Jivera Swarupe Hoi Nityara Krishnadas. Mamai Vamsha Jiva Loke Jiva Buddha Sanatana. They have missed this principle, that all of them have forgotten that in actuality, actual practice, each of them are merely amshas or minute part and particles of the Supreme Lord. Because we have forgotten that, we are trapped in the karmic cycle, changing bodies and planets. That is one. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu moves on in his conversation with Rupa Goswami and says, basically there are two types of living entities in this world. What are the two types? At the very outset, the eternally liberated and the eternally conditioned. The Nitya Siddha and the Nitya Bandha. Nitya Bandha means eternally conditioned, who are transmigrating like this. Okay. Now, he says that out of these people who are Nitya Baddha, who are eternally conditioned, who are transmigrating, there are two types of people. Okay, two types of entities. The moving, non-moving entities and the moving entities. Sthavara Jangama. Sthavara means what? Non-moving. And moving means Jangama. These are two classifications within the Nitya Baddha, who are eternally conditioned. Now, further he says, now sthavara refers to non-moving, like trees, etc. But amongst the moving entities, Jangama, he says that there are again millions and trillions of jivas who are jangama, who are moving, those who can be classified into three, which fly in the sky, those which swim in the water, and those which walk on the land. Now if you see the approach which is taken here, where it is delineated, you know, one-legged, two-legged, biped, etc. It's very similar approach Narayana is taking. So again, there is a very famous verse in Srimad Bhagavatam: Karmana daiva netrena jantu deha upapatte sthiya sthiya pravishta udara pumsareta kanashaya, which means based on one's karma and under the jurisdiction or supervision of the governance of the Devi Devatas and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a jiva enters the womb of a mother and thereby gets body life after life. So many species are there, flying in sky, swimming in water, walking on land. So the point that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is making here is that please understand that amongst these, you have got a human form of life, which is extremely rare. Now, the rarity of human form of life, all of us know. But Mahaprabhu is further delineating that in this rare human form also, most of this human form of people who have this human form are ignorant of spiritual science. They have unclean habits, ignorant of spiritual life. 3 points he makes: ignorant of spiritual life, unclean habits they have, and they are faithless, living like animals, and therefore categorized as uncivilized. So even amongst this jangama, who are the moving entities who walk on land, amongst them the human life, it is very rare. Majority of them are uncivilized. Mahaprabhu concludes that in his conversation with Rupa Goswami. Now he talks about that rare set of people who are civilized. And how does Mahaprabhu say in that context? Civilized means those who are believers, those who believe. There Mahaprabhu says, even amongst those who believe, they have the righteous who are genuinely believe and do something about it, who are advancing in spiritual life, who he refers to as the Aryans, who advance. And then there are those believers who believe but are still unrighteous. Like you will find many times when we, you know, talk to people, they say that, yeah, my entire family, you know, we believe in Krishna. We all believe in Krishna. And then they will all, you know, they'll be involved in smoking, drinking, breaking all the regulatory principles. But they will say, yeah, Bhagavad Gita is good. Yeah, we all believe. We are very God-fearing family. Right? So these are the unrighteous and so far little bit of civilization. Civilization, at least they have some faith, some supreme power. Now, civilized people have been categorized as righteous and unrighteous. Now let us talk about the righteous and classify further in righteous. Amongst those who are righteous, most of them are transcendentalists. They are righteous. They say that we all live a very clean life. We go to temple. We have this Ganesh temple there. We go there. We do, you know, what is that? Mahamrityunjaya Om in our house. Or we chant the Atharvashish, you know, for Lord Ganesh. So we are very righteous people. So, our principle is simple: do good to others and earn honestly, and then enjoy life. Don't trouble others in your enjoyment. So, we are very nice, righteous people. But their goal is also sense gratification. How to make the material life a very comfortable place. We work hard, we don't trouble anyone, we enjoy the fruits of our labor. So, these are righteous people who are believers, but still their goal is or sense gratification. Now out of these righteous people, it is said that very few people out of those who are righteous and civilized even desire mukti. Very few people who are righteous and civilized even desire mukti. Which means very few people, only a handful of living entities even have a desire to get out of this material world. Most of them are very happy in this material world. So, such people who desire, who want liberation, these are the people who really are very receptive to the principle of Atma Tattva when spoken. Which is what Prabhupada is saying. If you have this desire to enjoy this material world, no matter what, whatever is spoken to you, it will just go right across through your head. Nothing will permeate inside. So, Prabhupada also mentions in the purport that even theoretically, if one understands, even theoretically, if one understands Atma Tattva, such a person can be called as mukt or liberated. Even theoretically, if you understand. Now, out of those who understand this theoretically, that we are spirit, soul, body is temporary, this material world is dukkhala and shashvata. Out of those people who understand this theoretically and endeavor for liberation, very few out of them also attain their swarup. What swarup? Jivena Swarupa Nitya Krishnadas. Out of that, so just imagine that devotee gun, the congregation of devotees, is such a minute part of this whole superset of living entities. So devotees are extremely rare. Right? For us who see devotees all the time in the temple, we take devotees for granted. But actually, the greatest gift that all of us have been given is the association of devotees in this material world. And the greatest fear which all of us have and should also have is the fear of losing this association where we to get another lifetime. So, this is so rare. A Krishna Bhakt is so rare. And it is mentioned there also, as Prabhupada mentions in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that these people who eventually understand that they are servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such people are called as Krishna Bhaktas, and they are extremely rare. Now let us talk about the realm of Krishna Bhaktas. Let us filter down from there also, right? We started off by moving and non-moving entities, and now we are percolated down, filtering to Krishna Bhaktas. Now even in Krishna Bhaktas, we start as most of us, we all start as Kanishtha Adhikaris. Okay. So most of them start as Kanishtas. And by the mercy of the Lord and the Guru, okay, then these Kanishtha Adhikaris, okay, who all of us start, we get some seed of bhakti which is sown in our heart by the spiritual master or masters, by the siksha and diksha gurus. And then by constant siksha, that seed is watered. And by sincere practice of Krishna consciousness, many devotees will graduate from the Kanishtha stage to the Madhyama stage. And some devotees will graduate from the Madhyama to the Uttama stage according to their level of knowledge and their faith in Bhakti. Now, while we have some very, very advanced devotees within ISKCON, some Uttama Adhikaris within ISKCON, we have some really, really advanced devotees. Majority of the devotees, if you see in ISKCON, are still in the Kanishtha or the Madhyama stage, having started with some Shraddha or some faith in the initial stage. Many of us are engaged doing devotional service and within the temple, outside the temple, doing our own sadhana as well as doing preaching with full faith in the Lord. Now, though many of us are doing this, most of us are struggling for many years still in the platform of Anartha Nivritti to come to the Nishtha platform. I don't think most people will disagree with this statement that yes, we have come through the platform of initial loose faith, come into the association of Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha, association of devotees, started doing our 16 rounds following the four regulative principles. But the stage of Anartha Nivritti is a big stage, right? It consumes maximum time in our this present life. And hopefully, it doesn't continue at least in the next lifetime. At least we come out of this lifetime and go to some higher stages in our next lifetime. But many struggle in the Anartha, most devotees struggle in the Anartha Nivritti stage to come to the Nishtha stage. Now, how, whether one succeeds or not, it depends on the consistency with which one does one's sadhana, seva, and also sadachar, the consistency with which we relate with devotees. Now, the reason for such struggle in Krishna consciousness, struggling in anartha nivritti, usually is rooted in what Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport as the mentality for enjoying the material energy alongside bhakti. So while all of us are still performing bhakti, we still have that small traces of wanting to enjoy the material world, even if it means enjoying the rasagulla, right? So there is that minute desire to enjoy the material world, or there is significant desire still to enjoy the material world. So all of us are on different platforms. Some are in 30 Krishna consciousness, 70 enjoy. Some are in 70 Krishna consciousness, 30 enjoy. Some may be 90 Krishna consciousness, 10 enjoy. Some may be 99 Krishna consciousness, 1 enjoy. So there are different levels, no? Different people are at different levels, right? So, but nevertheless, the underlying principle that Krishna consciousness and desire to enjoy the material world go ill together still stands. So to the extent that we want to enjoy this material world, we are still at risk. We still have a minute projection inside ourselves. So yesterday in our office, you know, all of us are working from home because of this corona situation. We haven't gone to, you know, our kshetra, if you like, you know, this Docklands for 2 weeks now. Okay. So what is happening is what we do in office usually is that we have a lunchtime bhagavatam in office. So we try to not to keep meetings between 12:45 to, you know, 1:30, 1:45. We all go to, you know, our level 14 in our office. So we have few devotees. Thankfully, I am fortunate to have association of these devotees in my team. Vasik Chandra Prabhu is there, Preeti Mandaji is there, then we have our Balavan Prabhu. So all of us, we take opportunities to go up to level 14 and discuss Krishna Katha between, you know, sandwiched between 2 office days, pre, you know, the first innings and the second innings in office, if you like. Okay. So yesterday, day before yesterday, our Sri Chandra Prabhu told me that, Prabhu, we are missing that. Though we are working from home, the only reason we are missing office is that one. So can we establish some teleconference? No, we'll book our calendars. Okay. And then we will all have, you know, Zoom meeting and we will discuss Krishna Katha. You know, because that is something which was happening every day. So why stop a Krishna conscious activity? Because working from home, right? So yesterday, you know, we started that. You know, so for 1 hour, between 1 and 2, we did a teleconference. Everyone was logged in and we did that from home. So one of the interesting questions that came up is the fear of, is the aspect of fear. So one of them was mentioning that, you know, there is, we all have that fear. So is it good or bad? This fear of coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Is it good or is it bad? Okay. Now, as practicing devotees since many years, because we have not yet reached, at least for me I can say, not reached the highest levels of devotional service where fear has absolutely gone. Abhayam, Abhayacharan, Prabhupada was Abhayacharan. At least many of us are far away from that stage. So, obviously it is not very difficult to humbly admit that there is fear. That maybe I may get that virus or I may, you know, have to leave this material world. But if you actually see, as practicing devotees, while we may have this fear, actually what is our fear? And this is a blessing actually. This fear is the biggest blessing that Prabhupada has given us. And most of you, if you think, you will also agree to this. Our actual fear is not dying. Our actual fear is dying without maturing in Krishna consciousness. Is it right? When we think, if someone dies, death can come tomorrow, maybe we are not really afraid about death, because we know that, okay, we have a soul and we will be born again. But that is more fearful. More than the death, being born again in this material world, and God knows which species. Obviously, let us understand that, okay, because we have been practicing devotees, maybe we get a human form of life. But is this human form of life also something which we desire? Do we want to come again and then start going to school and A for apple, B for, you know, whatever, you know, biscuit, C for chocolate, and then we will have to go through all that history, which is useless. Many of those are useless information. geography, what is grown in which parts of the country, and then write an exam, and then you have to get marks. Again, our parents will tell us that you have to study hard so that you can settle down in life, later on you'll have a good future. And then we'll all come again, do our 12th standard exam, and you know, then study all that engineering again. It is that thought, you know, oh Krishna. So, in one sense, the mukti vadi within us comes out. It is said desire for liberation is not something which a devotee wants. But if you start thinking like that, you say, oh Krishna, look, better liberation. You know, I don't want to come again, go through that cycle. Okay, so as much as devotees may have that one fear. But then there is another option also, which, I mean, when I was thinking through this question deeply in my mind, some devotee asked about fear, I realized that yes, I have fear. I don't want to come back and go through, you know, all that nonsense. You know? If I am asked to live all my life again, I don't want to live that. Because I know most of my life has been involved, engaged in sense gratification, even now it's going on. We want to finish this whole business in this material world and go back to Godhead. In as much as it is, you know, against the principles of pure bhakti, if you like. Because pure bhakti means what? Moksha laghutatva. That is a characteristic. You know? Derive the concept of liberation. But in one sense, our liberation is that we want to go back to the spiritual world and serve the Lord. But if you take Prabhupada for example, Prabhupada did not fear coming back into this material world. Prabhupada, in some lectures I heard that, Krishna asked Prabhupada that, you know, Prabhupada said about, you know, devotees generally say that, what if I get contaminated? And the Lord says that, you know, no, you will not. There is a purpose for which you are going down. And that's why we say Krishna Prishthaya Bhutta. So Prabhupada didn't come down because of this karma. He came down to deliver all of us. Okay. So sometimes devotees may think that way also. Oh Lord, that, you know, if you have a desire for me to contribute to this material world, if I'm coming as a part of your desire, then it's okay, but at least don't again send me back because of my karmic reaction. God knows where I will be born. God knows what all samskaras I will leave my body with, for which, you know, I will be penalized. So there is this fear also. In one sense, it's a healthy fear of being reborn in this material world. But, and again, you know, in Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna in that purport to Neha Vikramana Soshti Pratvaya Nodhita, you know, in those sections, you know, it is mentioned that the greatest fear for a devotee is to be lose the human, for any human being, to lose the human form of life and be born as this three-legged, four-legged, no-legged animals. Okay? And we don't want to be born in any of these species. And as much as we don't even want to be born in this material world in whatever situation. Okay. But many of us will realize gradually as we hit the, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, that time is running out and still we have not come to, you know, Madanakya Mahabhava, that stage. Okay, so we know that we are still struggling with certain basic problems in our own lives. Therefore, there is a high probability that we may have to come back. But the good news is given in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tekva Swadharmam Charanam Bhujam Hare Bhajanna Pakva Thapate Tato Yedi. So in that verse, when Narada Muni is having a sambhal with Vyasadeva, he said that if our bhajan, if our Krishna consciousness is incomplete at the end of this lifetime, we will be born very likely in a wealthy family, or we will be born in a family of very advanced devotees. And there also classification is made. If a devotee has done Krishna consciousness for a very long time in his life, fairly mature, but still not fully, then born in a family of very advanced Vaishnavas. Whereas if a devotee has started Krishna consciousness and still in the initial stages, for in order to facilitate the devotee's Krishna consciousness and at least have money as an equation out of one's life, that person will be born in a wealthy family. So that is one hope that Srimad Bhagavatam gives all of us. Also, another hope that which I have heard in various lectures, which has been given, is that if a devotee at a very mature stage leaves one's body, then the devotee is given another body in the material world, but Kali Yuga is not going on there. There the devotee will be born in a universe where Krishna's pastimes are being performed. So there is a training that is given in that Leela, so that eventually then the devotee then can go back to the spiritual world and make and do Leela Pravesh, you know, in the spiritual world. So there are a lot of other options. So one, so what is not in our hands is whether we are born in the Treta Yuga or Satya Yuga. That is not in our hands. That's up to the Lord to decide. What is not in our hands is also whether we are born in a wealthy family or whether we are born in a, you know,
devotional family. That is also not in our hands. What is not in our hands is whether we are born, we lose our human form and then we are born in this three-legged, four-legged, etc. In that species. That is also not in our hands. What is only in our hands is I am where I am today. What can I do at least from today to become more serious in my sadhana, in my seva and in my sadachar? What can I do to become more deeper in my chanting, to go deeper into Srila Prabhupada's books, in my study of Srila Prabhupada's books, taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada's books? What more, how more can I serve the devotees? And more importantly, what can I do to remove my envy for devotees and maintain affectionate relationship with every single devotee, knowing very well the sthava jangama principle and how in this whole superset of living entities the species of devotees is extremely rare, and I in this lifetime have got the benefit of associating with this species of devotees. So that is the key message. If we ignore this message and if we don't take it further seriously, then we stand the risk of losing our human form of life, or having to go through many more janmas before we, and going through many more such situations of coronavirus, etc. Till we go back, till we really get hammered by the Lord and complete detachment comes from this material world. So better to take a proactive approach. This is, of course, I am telling myself this message, and take our Krishna consciousness more seriously. So this is, you know, in one sense, you know, when I was studying these sections, these are some of the thoughts that came to mind. So I'll end the class here and we'll ask any questions or comments. Yes, Madam.
Thank you for the nice class. So one who does Krishna consciousness and doesn't finish in one life, he gets a Brahmanical birth or aristocratic family. I'm wondering, like, how does it work with the aristocratic family? Is it Krishna consciousness aristocratic family? Because rich men's kids, they are not inclined to take to Krishna consciousness at all. So what is the thing by aristocratic?
Yeah, so the question, for the benefit of all those who are hearing, you know, remotely, the question is why we can understand the principle that one may, if one's bhajan is not right, then one may get birth in a Brahmana family. How do we understand the merit of being even born in an aristocratic family? Because today's aristocratic families, children, they really are not devotees. That is the question. So is that not a risk in one sense rather than a reward? So yes, the point is absolutely right that in today's aristocratic families, most children, very few will have any inclination for devotional life. In fact, in India, most of the children in aristocratic families, the parents have, the foremost concern of parents is that their children should not get into drugs. Okay, because the children of aristocratic families who have the ability to give money for these expensive drugs, okay, so they are the ones who are primarily targeted by the drug peddlers. Okay, so their primary thing is that, oh, our forefathers and we have worked so hard to establish this big business empire. One small, you know, drug dose can make our next whole bunch drug addicts, and then the whole business collapse, whole empire, whole bunch collapses. Okay. So yes, the point is very valid. But here we have to understand from the lens of what Srimad Bhagavatam is speaking. Lord Krishna has actually promised that my devotee will not perish. Okay, so now how is being born in an aristocratic family relevant for devotees? This question you should never ask a brahmachari. You should ask this to a grihastha. They will answer it well. Because most grihasthas in this congregation, and I can probably say the high degree of probability, no grihastha in our devotee congregation really is looking forward to working in corporate life. Most of them are fed up and tired going into the office and, you know, doing things for 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours a day, keeping us away from our basic, you know, activities of Krishna consciousness. Yes, it is true, Yukta Vairagya principle still means that we should see our office as an extension of the temple and our devotional activities, because the income which comes from there can be used for preaching, everything is fine. But at the end of the day, still, office is not such a place which will remind you of Krishna all the time. In one sense, it does, because it says, oh God, when will I get out of this cycle? Yes. But actually, office is not a place where we do bhajan. Okay, we are deeply engaged in economic development, you know, when we
most devotees are looking for that day, and I can tell you, putting my hand to my chest, most devotees, including myself, are waiting for that day when we can finish this. Why do you think devotees are investing in this? What is that? Negative gearing, second property, third property, fifth property. Why are they doing this? Because everyone has this thing that I don't want to be working as a salaried employee, relying on my salary and paying income tax to the government, because then I cannot retire in this country till 75 years. And then at 75, if another virus, coronavirus 2 comes, the day I am retiring, my superannuation is zero. And then, you know, our government will say you can withdraw something and nothing will be left anyway. So the material world is not guaranteeing any kind of retirement. Okay. And at 75, if one is going to office, when will one do bhajan? At 50, Prabhupada is saying, Vanaprastha, Ekavan, 51, go to the forest. And we are still in that forest of material existence. Dockland, Victoria 3008. Pin code. Okay, our whole life will go there. Right? So therefore, being born in an aristocratic family, if you give this proposition to a trust, they'll accept it. They will say, oh, if I can take some inheritance and I really can then have a bank balance and do good, and then I can tell my boss anytime, thank you, but no thanks. I'm not going to work for more than 40 hours a week. No. If a devotee, if a grihastha has got that, you know, kind of, if a grihastha can actually say that to his workplace, I can tell you, it's a blessing. I myself will be very happy. You know? Because right now, I'll tell you why it is given. It is given for devotees whose bhajan is apakku. Please understand. So for a person who is a pure devotee, such a person's bhakti does not depend on any material situation. But because we are not pure devotees, or we think that our bhakti is still dependent on, to some extent, on our financial stability. Okay. But because none of us are Tukaram. If you ask me, I am not Tukaram. I cannot say, oh Lord, you know, what is that? Yasya aham anugrahanami tad dashye karishna. Take away everything, you know, from me. You know, I am still worried that if the Lord takes away everything from me, what will I do? You know, because still we are not, I have at least not reached that platform where bhakti can stand in itself independent. So, humbly admitting, you know, and most instances will agree that humbly admitting our position, for most Rastas, financial stability is a big part of their being able to chant attentively in Krishna consciousness and being able to perform their daily duties. So, therefore, such a proposition will definitely be very attractive for a devotee who is still dependent on financial stability for progressing in Krishna consciousness.
Yes, there
will
still be opportunity for Krishna
consciousness. Definitely. So at least you don't have to work this hard and you can spend most of your time in bhakti. For example, I know of a devotee who got an inheritance in Mayapur. Okay, I know many of you know who it is. But that devotee was actually, you know, didn't have much of money. But some grandmother from somewhere left a big inheritance. So the devotee decided, now I don't have to travel or work anywhere. I can now meet Mayapur and do my bhajan nicely. So money is not bad in that sense. Okay, money in itself is not good or bad. That money, which the stability on which we perform a Krishna consciousness is okay. It's good. It's not wrong to have financial stability. But definitely, absence of financial stability can apple cart devotional life of a devotee. It can. It has the potential to move someone away from Krishna consciousness because of the fact that the bhajan is not yet right. Any other questions?
So I'm just thinking about the grihasthas and the brahmacharis. For a grihastha, the desire for wanting to be with Krishna and wanting to be with devotees in the temple might be a lot stronger than a brahmachari who's in the ashram all the time. And for a brahmachari, the desire to, or the slight inclination of what would it be like to be a grihastha, what might it be like to work outside might be a bit stronger. So I think it's just the odd grass is greener on the other side sort of thing. So maybe one isn't better than the other, because grihastha, that strong desire to, I want to be with Krishna, I want to finish work so I can be with Krishna, I want to finish work so I can go to my lunch break and then talk about Krishna with my colleagues, might be a lot stronger than somebody who's just in the temple all the time. So that's more of a comment, I guess.
It's more of a comment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah. So the grass is, you know, sometimes a brahmachari may have that thing that, okay, can I not be a grihastha? And ask all grihasthas, they will say, could I not have been a brahmachari? Many grihasthas will think like that. Okay. So yes, the grass is looks greener on the other side, but in the realm of absolute truth, there is only one grass which looks green. Whether you are a grihastha or a brahmachari or a vanaprastha or a sannyas, the grass is only green to the extent that we are in bhakti. So it doesn't matter. That's why bhakti manta said, "Grihe tapo, vane tapo, sada hari bolitapo." So the varna or ashram actually doesn't matter. What matters is how Krishna conscious we are. Given any ashram. So grihastha ashram is a glorious ashram. Our own Prabhupada had a grihastha ashram. Okay. So it's a glorious ashram. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, before he became Babaji, he was also in grihastha ashram. Okay. So in grihastha ashram also one can serve. There are so many examples in grihasthas. For example, our Ambarish Prabhu is there. A glorious service. No? By his mercy, we have a temple of Vedic calendar. So there are exemplary grihasthas in our congregation. Exemplary grihasthas. Gurujan Prabhu, he was a grihastha. Now, Gurujan Prabhu is showing us the way how to be lead, you know, ideal vanaprastha life. Shankarshanga Sanitari, showing us ideally. Our own Anirudh Prabhu and Achindra Kumataji are showing us the way. Are they not grihasthas? So are they not showing us the way how to, you know, lead a life of Krishna consciousness? So Kesha Prabhu is there. No? So we have wonderful Gangeshwar Prabhu, we have amazing examples of grihastha in this congregation. So it doesn't matter whether one is grihastha or one is brahmachari. Brahmachari also we have wonderful examples. You know? To me, each and every brahmachari in this temple is glorious. Because at the prime age of youth, where the attraction to the opposite sex is very strong, our brahmacharis have taken a decision, you know, for their own spiritual advancement as well as to be an example to us and our children to take to a life of brahmachari or brahmacharini. So we are extremely, all the grihastha, the healthy congregation is when grihasthas have genuine appreciation for brahmacharis and brahmacharis have genuine appreciation for grihasthas as devotees, in as much as both of them are in that respect, the fundamental of the respect is based on principles of Krishna consciousness. So it is a wonderful congregation we have here in Mumbai, and I am very fortunate to be part of this congregation. And I am extra fortunate today that, you know, actually Yamuna Leela was supposed to give class today. I swapped with her. And I am very fortunate that I am sitting here and taking darshan of the ladies, because we have been using these ladies outside. You know, ask any grihastha outside, they are all thirsty to come and take darshan of Radha Vallabha and Mahaprabhu and Jagannath. Every devotee outside is lamenting, "My God, when will the temple open and when can I come?" Like that. So at least, you know, for a few more minutes that I have till I am kicked out from here, with wide eyes and then go home with memories till the time as the next pastor comes. Okay, so I will stop here because it's... Yes, Madhi, sorry.
I was wondering, I mean, the point that you mentioned about while we are practicing bhakti, we are still tendency to enjoy. That tendency of joining and controlling in bhakti, the gradual progress in that way from the gross aspect of enjoyment while we are doing bhakti, the subtle aspect. I wanted to you to request to spend a little bit more about that subtle aspect of enjoyment while we do bhakti.
Yeah, so Madhuri's question is that, can you elaborate on the subtle aspect of the desire to enjoy even while doing bhakti? So you wanted to elaborate on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So the subtle desire to enjoy can come in bhakti in many forms. Okay. For example, bhakti entails so many services that we do. Bulk of our devotional life is about service. That's why Srila Prabhupada called bhakti as devotional service. Okay. Now these services can be anything, right from, you know, making garlands, to doing wet side service, dry side service, decorating the altar, okay, to preaching, giving classes, to conducting teaching courses, etc., etc., to doing kirtans as a kirtanier in the temple. So there are so many services we do. Now, the subtle aspect for a devotee comes in that a devotee seeks recognition, prestige, and reward through the activities of devotional service. Okay, for example, let's say someone is a good kirtanier. Okay, it is not uncommon in the mind of a person who is a good kirtanier to feel bad or sad within the heart if they have not been given prime slot of 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock during Janmashtami. It is not uncommon for that thought to come in the mind. It is not uncommon for a person
to get a desire, saying that why am I getting to do an aarti in the afternoon hours when nobody is in the temple? Can I not be the person who can do aarti when on a Janmashtami day in the morning when the temple is full, so that everyone can see me on the altar? So these kind of thoughts can come because the mind is still the mind. It is still not 100% our friend. So the mind will keep giving suggestions, saying that you are doing so many things. You know, you should be recognized. You know, people are not giving you whatever your due is in this world, etc. So that is how subtly the Maya will keep trying and sending messages through our mind, not to take the position of Trinada Pismanichena, Tahatahoriya Sahishnuna, Amanina Manadena Ketanya Sadhati. The mind always will tell us that we should be recognized for whatever we should do. We should have a status, we should have a position in the temple. So these are the small anarthas which will come as a result of doing bhakti. And this is elaborated. If you would like to read more, the best explanation for this I have found in two books. Jaiva Dharma, if you would like to read Bhakti Vinod Thakur books, or Madhuri Academy, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about it in the initial opening chapters. Okay, there it is mentioned how anarthas can arise owing to the process of bhakti, not pure bhakti. Pure bhakti, there is no question of anarthas. But while doing the vidhi of bhakti, then how anarthas can come? This can give you more deeper explanations around that subtle aspect which you are asking about. But subtle means essentially the desire for us to be in the center. That can come from time to time, even in Krishna consciousness for someone. To desire to be the controller of things. For example, if I'm doing garland services, you know, then I have to be in control of what garland will be made, what flowers will be chosen. You know? So even in the process of garland itself, it can happen quite possible that people, 5 devotees are making garlands and they will not talk to each other after a few days because there is fights on who to whose flower and all that. You know what I mean? So the activity is bhakti, but the mood is not bhakti in that activity. Okay. So it can happen. Now somebody may say, you know, I wanted the best garland for my Gaur Mithai because I was making Gaur Mithai's garland. So yes, there is no doubt, there is full merit to the thought that my deity should have the best garland. But in the scriptures, in Bhagavad Gita itself, the fundamental idea of pleasing the Lord at the cost of displeasing a devotee, it is said that is called as Prakrita Bhakta or a Kanishtha Adhikari. A Kanishtha Adhikari mentality means what? Me and the Lord to help with the devotees, how they have felt during my service. So these are the subtle aspects which we'll have to always keep reminding us that no matter what, more important than Sri Sri Radha Vallabha is the devotees. Because if we do not have affectionate dealings with the devotees, if we still have envy in our heart, if we still have hatred in our heart for devotees, we are not going back to Godhead in this lifetime, 100%. There is no doubt about that. So if we, while studying Srila Prabhupada's books, while doing our bhajan, if we also keep thinking, introspecting within our heart, why do I behave the way I behave with so many devotees, over a period of time, we will realize that actually we are not there. You know, for an idiot like me, it may take many, many years. I'm talking about myself. But the more I think about it, I'm realizing, yes, so many improper dealings I have had with devotees in the past. And our prayer to the Lord will be, oh my Lord, I don't know whether I will end up pleasing you or not in this lifetime. Let me not displease any devotees. Okay, at least going forward, for whatever I have done, we should try and introspect on that and go and re-establish our relationship with all those devotees with whom we have not had good relationships. And then, you know, in that mode, then continue our chanting. And be very careful that in future, at least we don't commit more offenses towards devotees. So as long as we are constantly reminding ourselves of this message, then we are safe to that extent about that subtle attacks of Maya. But we have to constantly be in touch with those messages. And those messages are given in Srila Prabhupada's books. That's why it's very important to be in touch with philosophy. Only seva without enough adhyaya, swadhyaya, or enough hearing and enough reading, only if we do seva, then we are very vulnerable to thinking that, you know, I am the center of everything that happens in the temple. So we have to take shelter of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness as much as we are doing seva. Both have to go very tight hand in hand. Only studying philosophy without seva, there is no point, because there is no service. So we are not going to get, we are not doing anything practical for the Lord. But only doing practical without studying means that we will not understand, or we will not be reminded of the essential principles that underlie our service in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, the subtle aspects of Maya can still, you know, keep us away from Krishna, despite us being busy in Krishna consciousness activities. Am I making sense?
Maybe if we know how to counteract that, because somehow or another, if we are in court and committed or be affected by that, it's because it's more unconscious.
Yeah.
All of us, somehow or another, we have the intense or sincerity to try to work on that. But still, we are affected by that because unconscious. How to work with that?
Yeah, so that's what I was trying to explain. How to work with that is not to be unconscious, to be conscious. So from unconscious to consciousness is why this book, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, these daily classes, ISKCON Desire Tree, where you have so many thousands and thousands of lectures, as long as that we are in touch with the fire of bhakti. The fire of bhakti comes through, you know, the fire of bhakti comes through us through the medium of Vaishnava's words, okay, the Vani. As long as we are in touch with Vani, whether in the form of Prabhupada's books or, you know, Srila Prabhupada's glorious disciples who are giving so many, you know, lectures, they are grand disciples. Okay. So as long as we are in touch with all this, then it will not touch us. That is why Mahaprabhu said that famous verse. What is that? Maya Jhapatiya Dhare. Krishna Bhuli Jiva Bhoga Vanchakare Nistare Maya Jhapatiya Dhare. The moment that you take your face away from Krishna consciousness, immediately Maya is waiting to grab. And that, those are those subtle thoughts which come in the mind. This means that still we have to go deeper and deeper. Of course, this, I'm nobody to lecture on this. I'm highly imperfect. So, as much as I'm answering you, I'm reminding myself what I should do. So,
short question.
Okay, we'll take one last question. Mataji, what are the rules nowadays to close at time? I don't know.
It's okay.
Authorities. Pardon?
You can go over a bit.
Okay,
please. Okay, today we talked about many living entities with many different number of legs. How many legs coronavirus has?
How many legs coronavirus has? I have no idea. But even without, whether it has legs or not, definitely it will sweep us out of our feet from this material world. It has got the potential. So I don't know how many legs it has got. You are a scientist. You should tell us.
Srimad Bhagavatam scientist to know more.
Pardon?
Srimad Bhagavatam scientist should have answer.
Yes. Okay, I'll stop here. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai.